Informing America's farmers and ranchers. This is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Welcome into Agriculture of America, AOA, here today. Thanks for joining us. We got a lot to get to on our program, so hope, like me, your coffee cup is full and ready for conversation here on the show today. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Coming up here, we're going to have a conversation with North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer here in segment two. Where are we at with appropriations? We got one minibus done, but we have another one to get done here before another deadline next week. We're going to talk about that and also a few different agriculture-related issues that Senator Cramer has signed on to some of these initiatives as well, with wage labor rates and more. So we're going to talk about all that coming up here in segment two today. Then in segment three, Sigrid Johannes with the NCBA and the Public Lands Council is going to join us. Some different topics that we need to catch up on in terms of the Public Lands Council. So looking forward to talking with her in segment three after the bottom of the hour. And then in segment four today, we're going to wrap the show with a conversation I had back at Commodity Classic with Corey Rosenbusch from the Fertilizer Institute. All that and more coming up on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Downtime's a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex premium diesel fuel. Learn more at Cenex.com. Well, let's start things off and get a look at what's happening in the markets. A little bit of a pop in soybeans on Thursday's trade. Joining us now, Mike Zuzalo with Global Commodity Analytics. Mike, thanks for being back with us here on AOA. And, you know, the interesting moves in the markets continue. Here we are, soybeans breaking through some moving averages and getting back into the $12 range here on Thursday, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Jesse. The market, I think, today was fed a little bit with a buy bean, sell wheat type idea starting to take hold a little bit more with a break above, as you say, in the soy, above a key resistance level and breaking us out of a kind of a trading range market now and opening up the upside a bit, because the soybean export sales were up 55% from the four-week average, while the wheat was down 71%. From the four-week average, and that was actually a marketing year low. So we've got the soybeans finding some more export demand, and that kind of goes hand in glove with fresh reports from Reuters saying this. No one else is saying it yet, but talk that China has canceled now Australian wheat. So unlike the past few cancellations, trade's actually taking it at face value more so today.
Well, and that's an interesting topic I want to ask you about a little bit more as well. You bring up China canceling wheat. They've been canceling U.S. purchases, French wheat, now Australian wheat. So what exactly is going on here? I know you've been following this and kind of looking at your analysis here. I mean, what exactly is going on? What do we think China is doing here in this window?
My expectation is that China's probably looking at corn as a cheaper commodity to buy versus the wheat, especially as a feed grain at this point. And then they're probably looking at maybe filling their coffers a little bit extra on the corn as well. But that would be my first guess as far as why would they be canceling wheat all around the world and yet buying corn. And we saw in the export sales this morning, Taiwan was our number three buyer of corn. China was our number four buyer of corn. We booked another 100,000 tons on a tender this morning as well to Mexico. And that probably helps explain why the corn's finding some support against this double-digit loss in the wheat as the March futures gets ready to expire. And I think it's a really key day because of the March futures. It's a really key day from a standpoint of the spread trade. And I see this market, generally speaking, Jesse, is one where I don't want the soybeans to go up by themselves. I really want the corn and the wheat underneath the soybeans supporting them. Why? Because the world supply demand fundamentals are much more favorable at this point for the wheat and the corn than they are the soybeans. So I would probably be a hedger at this point if you were working with me.
Well, I know you look at some very interesting correlations as well, and you and I talked about this on the Wednesday Market Talk episode. You kind of compared copper with SRW futures, and looking at a chart overlay of that, there's a lot of similarities there, Mike.
Yeah, we've broken free of a very strong relationship and a positive price relationship between those two, and these two, I think, are both highly sensitive to what's happening in the currency markets and with China. And it really is in the currencies about China, Brazil, and the United States dollar, in my opinion, Jesse. So if we're going to garner more exports and cut back on imports, it's going to have to be from a weakening dollar. And I think that's where the copper has taken off. Why? Because China's cut back on their smelting and processing. And it's because their processing fees that smelters receive domestically are at 10-year lows. So they just don't have the incentive. So you've got some undercurrents of real weak economic data still showing up in the commodities. And I think to myself, well, if wheat is canceled today, why wouldn't soybeans be canceled down the road here, especially if Brazil doesn't have a real big hit to their crop supply? So that's the logic, is looking maybe a couple, 3 months down the road instead of right here today.
Yeah, that's definitely good things to think about. And you brought up Brazil. I know there's a little bit of concern maybe with Safrinha corn production here in terms of weather. They got a little bit of a heat dome. Soil moisture is a little bit rocky in some spots. I know that's something you're tracking as well, Mike.
Yeah, it is. And I think this is where the area of the center west Brazil, the top three provinces for the second crop corn, the top three areas of concern on these drought maps. And they're getting very, very hot again. Add to that the new drought monitor that came out this morning from the U.S. Government, USDA, and among others, and corn now is at 36% agriculture and drought versus 32% last week, 31% a year ago. Corn and beans now are above and have been above last year at this time period. So I think even though the rains came in overnight in some areas of Missouri and Illinois, it was a pretty narrow band, but I think these are concerns for the corn. So Brazil is more about the corn, in my opinion, not the soybeans, but the trade's, I think, on a different track right now.
All right. One other thing I need to ask you about, the producer price index out Thursday morning. Did I see that right? Double the expected trade figure, Mike?
Yeah, this is a really big issue from a standpoint of getting the Federal Reserve to get off the commodities back and let the Federal Reserve cut interest rates and then free up the risk on rallying commodities. This CPI and PPI both are suggesting they're not going to cut anytime soon. Having said that, I see the crude oil market only about 10 cents a barrel from making a new 2024 high in lead month futures today. So let's keep our eye on that, because we might need to price in some more inflation into our basic commodities. And that, I think, would start with crude oil.
Well, we got about 30 seconds, Mike. We haven't even touched livestock. You had any notes for us at cattle and hogs here towards the end of the week?
Yeah, we've started to see some weakening on the demand base on the export side. We've gotten some negative consumer numbers, and obviously these PPI and CPI data numbers are really hurting the pocketbooks. But export sales this morning down 24% in pork versus the average, beef down 19%, a marketing year low. So we're starting to see a little bit of chinks in the armor in that cattle side. We need the feeders. We need the hogs to underpin the cattle, if you ask me.
Well, always a wealth of knowledge, and folks can learn more at globalcomresearch.com. That's globalcom with two M's, research.com, to find Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. Mike, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us on AOA. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Jesse. Have a great day.
Thank you, and you as well. Mike Zuzulo there with Global Commodity Analytics here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Greases. Learn more at Cenex.com. We'll talk with North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer on the way next here on AOA, Agriculture of America. On the March episode of the Monthly Grind with the National Corn Growers Association, we learn about the newly launched Radical Challenge and the need for finding new uses for corn with Dr. Alex Buck, Director of Industrial Innovation at Iowa Corn, and Chad Epler, NCGA's Market Development Action Team Vice Chair.
The Radical Challenge is an open innovation challenge. It sets out to invest a minimum of $1.5 million checkoff dollars into startup and growth companies from around the world so that we can drive new uses for corn and develop long-term sustainable demand for corn production.
Well, what we have here domestically, corn is grown in about 100 million acres. And so 48% of the corn production is used for animal feed, 30% biofuels, 22% exports. But we still have this mass surplus that we need to find a use for. We are looking for people that have these ideas and want to put it to use and use these bushels of corn.
Learn more online at radical.vc and join us the first Wednesday of every month for the Monthly Grind on AOA.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
When news happens in agriculture or when the markets are moving, we've got you covered as your trusted voice in agriculture. The team at the American Ag Network has the knowledge and experience to keep you informed on the issues impacting farmers and ranchers. We've got you covered on air, online, and on demand. Find the American Ag Network on your favorite social media platforms and also follow the American Ag Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are the American Ag Network.
We are the nation's largest integrated healthcare system, providing life-changing care to over 9 million veterans.
Our hands are busy, competent, skilled, healing, helping, and friendly. A place where diverse teams come together hand in hand to provide full patient-centered care. Working in state-of-the-art facilities, with influential leaders in healthcare, all with a single goal in mind, to help veterans heal, recover, and get their lives back in a place where everyone plays a part and where your efforts are truly appreciated. A place so innovative and forward-thinking that we're rebuilding hands and where even robots lend a hand.
Join hands with us. Learn more at vacareers.va.gov.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by our friends at Cenex. Learn more online. Just go to cenex.com to find more about their premium diesels and lubricants today. Well, don't want to waste any time. Joining us now, North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer is with us here on AOA. Senator, thanks so much for joining us and hope all is well out in D.C.
Well, it's always a pleasure to join you, and I love to get caught up, Jesse, on what's going on in farm country and, more importantly, what's going on in D.C. that affects farm country. It's not always a pleasure to be in D.C., but that said, the work is really important, and there's a lot going on in as we head into now what looks to be an early start to spring planting, at least in my neck of the woods.
Yeah, I would say I think a lot of folks are going to have that early start to spring planting. There's no doubt there. Beautiful weather in many parts of the country, including across the Northern Plains and in North Dakota. Well, let's talk about a few issues. Just for starters, we obviously passed one minibus and avoided one deadline here that we had for a government shutdown. Now we got to get the other set of appropriations bills done. Just real quick, what's the latest in terms of getting the second half of the appropriations done here before the next deadline?
Well, I just talked actually to Speaker Johnson and Majority Leader Scalise specifically about that, because as you know, the House has this 72-hour rule that when they post the bill, it has to sit for 72 hours for people to read it, which makes a lot of sense. I think it's best to read these bills; they're big, and it sounds like they're like within moments or hours of having that done and then posting that bill. If by the time people are listening to this, it's not already posted, I really do think that at least five of the six bills are probably done. I think the Homeland Security bill is a little bit tougher, but if necessary, I think they're prepared to put up the five bills as one tranche, one minibus, and then save Homeland Security, which is a little harder, save it maybe for a continuing resolution or something like that. But and if that happens, the House should be able to take up the appropriation, the minibus, maybe as early as Monday, Tuesday, perhaps at the latest, at which point it would come right over to the Senate, and we would have until midnight Friday to pass those last six appropriations bills, which represent 2/3 of the budget. And of course, it has the heavier stuff like the defense appropriations and Homeland Security appropriations.
Well, and I know that some of the back and forth issues, we've had a lot of issues in the House, obviously. I know there's been some hold up to things like border security and aid to Ukraine, aid to Israel, et cetera, et cetera. And I know a lot of folks in rural America, and I'm sure a lot of folks in your state, are concerned about some of these things, like border security, for instance, et cetera. Are those still issues that you feel like are have been maybe holding up some of this appropriations process here, Senator?
I don't think there's any question that the disagreements over border security, how to appropriate for the authorities, how to make sure that there's adequate money and that the money's being spent on the right things. Those disagreements clearly create a logjam. And that said, I think the biggest issue, Jesse, for dysfunction in the House, frankly, is that the majority is so narrow. There's so few members. In fact, as of now, I think they're down to about 1.5 votes difference between passing a bill and not passing a bill. And so I think that's been the biggest hang up. What that means is that any dissenters within the majority party become obstructionists, and then you have to look to the other party for some help, which I think is always a good idea anyway, to find common ground. But I think that's led to a lot of the paralysis. And then just, the rules that govern the House these days, the ability for just one person to have a discharge of the speaker, things like that, it's just made it very difficult to function.
Well, hopefully we can get through this appropriations process and move forward. We got a lot of other issues to tackle. I know things like a farm bill, of course, and more. But I know you've been joining with a lot of your Senate colleagues here in recent days on some other ag-related issues as well. One of those is looking to freeze the H-2A wage rates. Talk about this a little bit for us, Senator.
Well, I don't like to see the federal government forcing higher wage rates on H-2As, on farmers and the producers that have H-2A immigrants, because I think that should be up to the market. I think that should be up to the farmer. If you start forcing that additional input cost on the farmer, then you're making it much more difficult for that farmer to to make a profit. And I think the individual producer, the employer working with his employees, his or her employees, to come up with a fair wage is a way better way to do it than to force an inflated wage. And the margins are getting pretty darn thin, pretty small. And then the uncertainty with a farm bill that's still not done. And so we're in the extension of the last one. I just think this is not the time, with increased input costs, inflation, high cost of capital because of high interest rates, workforce shortage. This is not the time to force extra spending or extra price on our farmers.
Well, and I think something that maybe ties in with that issue as well, you talk about the cost of inputs and more, the lack of agricultural trade, I think we've seen from this administration in recent years. And I know just on Wednesday, you joined with many of your GOP colleagues calling on the Biden administration to increase some of their agricultural trade and try to improve this trade deficit. So, I mean, talk about that a little bit more for us, because it just seems like we're not doing the things we could do when it comes to ag trade.
So perhaps the most important thing that the federal government can do for the producer, besides providing a nice modest safety net, is finding new markets. And it requires involvement by the federal government when you're talking to foreign countries. And frankly, our Commerce Department and the trade offices, they're critical to finding new markets. Agriculture has always been one of the shining examples of not a trade deficit, but a trade surplus. It's one of the areas in our geopolitical trade policies where the agricultural products have been represented an actual surplus. Now, occasionally there's a deficit, a little one, but we're trending the wrong way right now. So we'd like to see the administration get in, flex their muscle a little more, get more involved in some bilateral trade, and work with our trading partners and find some more markets for our commodities, because actually, Jesse, as if we find more markets, price takes care of itself. And if you can find the markets for the farmers to sell their products and get a fair price and turn of profit, then you don't need the safety net as much, particularly the ARC and the PLC safety nets. You have crop insurance to cover, those kinds of disasters. And it's just a far better, more efficient way to go with ag policy.
I think, too, another thought that I wanted to ask you about, we have a little bit of time yet here. I know you're on the Senate Banking Committee, and obviously inflation and interest rates continue to be a big concern for folks across the country. Fed Chair Jerome Powell was just testifying with you guys here in recent days.
Yes.
I know you were able to question him on some things. I mean, talk about that hearing and just some of this overall sticky inflation that we kind of continue to see right now.
Well, and that sticky inflation has, reared its head just in the last couple of days, even since the Banking Committee hearing. Although, I think with regard to Chairman Powell and the Fed, the reason they've been slow to bring down interest rates is because they've sensed the stickiness of this inflation. And right now, while we look at inflation as a rate, and we look at interest as a rate, the reality is those are aggregated expenses that raise the ceiling and the floor, if you will, and it makes it very difficult. So with higher input costs, and right now for energy, that's a little higher. Even, the core interest rate is even a little bit higher than the CPI. And that's because food and energy go so hand in hand together, and then they drive the cost of everything else up. So you have a food and energy inflation right now in the last 3 years. In fact, food's 21% up. So we look at it 3.4% and say, well, that's not so bad. Well, it's not so bad compared to 10 or 9, but it's double what it was 3 years ago. And you look at energy inflation, which is significantly up. And while that'll come down a little bit, or we'd like to see it come down a little bit, further regulation on the production of energy brings it back up again. And so, it's a big problem. So when you have sticky inflation, which raises input costs, and that results in holding interest rates high, you have the input costs and the capital costs at a high rate, and you don't necessarily see the price corresponding with that. So the farmer's getting it from all angles right now. And I don't see that changing anytime real soon. In fact, I don't see it changing in time for this crop season in the input side of it, which is when you're borrowing the money, right? The farmer's borrowing the money now. So you really see that I think adding to the burdens and shrinking the margins for the products that we're selling.
Well, Senator Kramer, we're up against the clock. Always appreciate a conversation. Thanks for joining us on AOA today, and we'll get you back on the show again real soon. Appreciate it.
Always look forward to it. Thank you, Jesse. Bye-bye.
All right, we'll be back with more AOA brought to you by Cenex on the way right after this.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
And we're back, looking at another lopsided matchup, Jim. Today we have a combine taking on a train.
Yeah, that heavy train is about 1,000 times heavier than the combine. No competition there.
Right, especially given that it'll take at least a mile to stop that train.
That's 18 football fields.
It's no contest. Every day people are injured or killed trying to beat a train at rail crossings. See tracks, think train.
This message brought to you by Operation Lifesaver.
You're listening to AOA. Here's a check of the market trade action on this Thursday. Jesse Allen with you here. Let's dive in as we are getting a bit of a pop in the soy complex here early on Thursday morning, with double-digit gains being seen in soybeans, strength from bean meal and bean oil as well. In fact, May beans getting above the 50-day moving average, about 15 cents above that moving average, which is right around 1201. If we can close above that, one has to wonder if that could force some of the managed money and funds to get out of their record short position here in this soy complex. So watching the movement in this soy complex pretty closely here today. corn is getting some support from the soy complex and mostly quiet two-sided action, not really following the wheat markets lower, which are seeing double-digit losses. China, again, canceling more wheat purchases, this time from Australia, or at least deferring those purchases. We're still waiting to see. That's the rumor in the trade, though. They've canceled French wheat yesterday and plenty of SRW wheat purchases from the U.S. here in the last week or so. So what exactly is China doing? Are they going to find cheaper corn? Are they looking to buy Russian wheat cheap? That remains to be seen, but that's a storyline to watch here in this market. Also watching South American weather. A little bit of concern about Sofrito corn as we see a heat dome settling over some key growing areas in Brazil. So keeping our eyes on that. We did get a corn sale announced on the Daily Wire to Mexico on Thursday. 100,000 metric tons sold for the 23-24 marketing year. Now on the livestock side, we saw export sales, beef sales, 11,200 metric tons, a marketing year low, while the pork side was 24,900 metric tons. That was down 32% from the previous week. A little bit of pressure here in cattle and hog futures as we work through Thursday's session. This is AOA for the American Ag Network. I'm Jesse Allen.
Being blind doesn't always look how others may think. Stargardt disease was supposed to define me.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
A blinding eye disease attempted to force me away from doing what I was born to do.
But it cannot stop me. I have the tools.
I will keep moving forward.
Pushing past the limits of this disability.
I know where to find support and where I can be seen.
Great vision doesn't require great sight. Innovative research, educational resources, supportive community. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is leading the charge in finding treatments and cures for blinding diseases. Make your impact today. Donate now at fightingblindness.org. A public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And today's AOA brought to you by Cenex. Cenex can help you determine the right high-quality premium lubricants to keep equipment protected for the long haul. Trust your local experts at Cenex or visit cenex.com for more information. Welcome back here to the show. Joining us now for a conversation. It's been a little while since I've had a chance to catch up with her. Sigrid Johannes, Director with the Public Lands Council and NCBA Government Affairs, is with us here on AOA. Sigrid, how are you? It's great to talk with you again.
Thanks for having me, Jesse.
We got a couple different things to discuss here on the show today. Let's start with the American Wildlife Habitat Conservation Act. Can you give us just a little background on what this is and what we're looking at here?
Absolutely. So this is a landmark bill that's been introduced by the chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee. That's Republican member Bruce Westerman from Arkansas. And he has the interesting distinction of being the only forester in Congress currently and has a really good perspective on what makes for common sense and durable conservation solutions. This bill, you can kind of think of it like a Republican version of RAWA, which is a longstanding wildlife and habitat package that's been introduced for several Congresses but never been able to make it across the finish line. This bill kind of builds on those good points in that bill and makes a couple key adjustments to it as well. One of the pieces that we're really excited about to see in this bill and very supportive of is some statutory reassurances for folks who participate in and enroll in voluntary conservation agreements. So across the plains, across the South, the Midwest, really every region of the country, you have folks who are participating in candidate conservation agreements or candidate conservation agreements with assurances, what we call CCAAs. And those are really important contracts that producers, you know, engage in to conserve habitat for species that are on the candidate list. They're not listed under the ESA yet, but they might be. And those have been really successful over the years in preventing listings by really conserving some of the prime habitat that wildlife needs to survive and thrive. Unfortunately, some recent decisions that we've seen under this administration from the Fish and Wildlife Service have really not counted the good work that's happened in those voluntary agreements and slapped those landowners and those permittees with pretty restrictive habitat designations, despite their good faith efforts to conserve the land. So this bill would prevent that from happening going forward, and it's one of many pieces that we're happy to see.
Yeah, and with this too, you know, I think about our farmers and ranchers. I mean, they are our original conservationists here in America. And to your point about some of the decisions from the Fish and Wildlife Service, I think about this reintroduction of grizzlies in the PNW. I mean, that's just one piece, I think, that can kind of fall under some of what we're talking about here with the American Wildlife Habitat Conservation Act, right?
You're absolutely right, Jesse. So that was a very controversial proposal that we saw from this administration to pretty much airdrop a population of grizzly bears into the North Cascades ecosystem. This is over the objections of decades of objections at this point from local residents, from families who live in rural parts of Washington State there, from ranchers who are worried about depredation. It's a really, really good example of a top-down approach where the federal government is kind of imposing their will over the concerns that have been voiced on the ground. And you're absolutely spot on that this bill addresses that problem as well. There's a really important condition on the funding that would go out as part of this Wildlife Habitat Conservation Act. There is a condition that any of the funds that go towards conservation projects have to go towards state or tribal-led projects that do not conflict with the will of local stakeholders. So in other words, you can't have any of the funds from this rule go towards empowering a federal plan, like, for example, a predator reintroduction plan that conflicts with the will of what the people on the ground who are going to be impacted actually want. So it's a really important directing of resources where they're going to make the biggest impact, where they matter the most, where they're going to go, you know, stretch furthest to protect those wildlife species that we all care about, but they're not going to go towards implementing plans that were cooked up in Washington, D.C., and maybe are completely contrary to what people on the ground in those states want.
All right. Another topic I want to ask you about as well. I know you and I had a passing conversation all the way back at NCBA CattleCon back in January, and you said to me, hey, we got to talk about vultures. I know there was, I believe, the Black Vulture Relief Act back in November is a piece of legislation we can discuss. Get me up to speed. What's going on with vultures, and what's something you're watching there with the Public Lands Council?
Absolutely. So black vultures continue to be a top concern for us. We need to get more regulatory flexibility to do lethal take on these birds. They are more than recovered. They are actually abundant and overcrowding in the United States. And so it's time to change how we manage that species. The Black Vulture Relief Act, you're absolutely right, was a great bill that we saw introduced in the House last year. It was a bipartisan measure that got some really good traction. What we've seen most recently, just in the past few weeks here, is that a Senate bill has also contained language on black vultures. So we've seen a bill introduced on the Senate side called the ACE Act Reauthorization, which is that America's Conservation Enhancement Act. And there is language included in that bill, which also gets at this black vulture problem and gets at the need for more flexibility. One of the pieces that's particularly interesting there is that the bill would require agencies to do a study to evaluate what the actual number is of vultures that are needed to have a sustainable breeding population. I think that's an important piece to this overall puzzle, in addition to getting more flexibility on take permits, because we need to actually know what the minimum is here. What number do we actually need to be aiming for when we manage this species? You know, every state in the country comes up with a number on where they want to end up for deer, for elk, for all of the other species that they do tag programs for. It's really no different for vultures. We need to know what the goal is that we're aiming for that's biologically sustainable, but that will allow producers to take a lot more of these animals and sort of relieve some of that pressure they're getting from depredation. Unfortunately, you know, we're coming up on the summer here, and you know as well as I do, Jesse, that Congress is all about reelection. They're all going to start thinking pretty soon towards November, and they're not going to be passing as many bills. But we are still very encouraged that we got both of these introduced this Congress. It lays a good foundation. We're going to push them as far as we can in 2024. And, you know, if we don't reach the finish line, these are going to be among the first bills that we try and get reintroduced in the next Congress.
We are talking today with Sigrid Johannes, Director of the Public Lands Council and NCBA Director of Government Affairs. And Sigrid, thinking about, to your point, maybe not being able to get some of these pieces of legislation through this year and with elections coming up, things like that. Obviously, I'm sure if, you know, our local constituents as well, our farmers and ranchers, if they reach out to their senators and congressmen and women and tell them how important some of these pieces of legislation are to their operation, I'm sure that can be a help as well to try and get some of the stuff across the finish line, right?
That makes an enormous difference. I would say it's very valuable always. It's especially valuable if you can give some firsthand experiences. If you have, you know, stories and you know, even better would be facts and figures, but stories go a long way. If you have experienced black vulture depredation on your farm or ranch, I would definitely encourage you to reach out to your members. The bills that you want to be talking about for vultures specifically on the House side of Congress, it's going to be the Black Vulture Relief Act. And on the Senate side of Congress, it's going to be the ACE Act reauthorization. That's ACE Act reauthorization. Both of those bills you can speak in favor of, but, you know, even if you don't want to speak to those specifically, just tell them what's going on. Get somebody on the phone. They have to listen to you. You're a constituent and your voice matters. So absolutely call in those stories, talk about how big of an issue depredation is for you. And you know, the more voices we have, the more pressure they feel to act. So that's definitely always helpful.
Sigrid, we've got a couple minutes here. Anything else that you are watching or working on right now with the Public Lands Council that folks need to be aware of?
Sure thing. So we've talked a lot about what's happening in Congress, Jesse, but I think the other, you know, side of the fence that we have to worry about is regulations, obviously. And I think, one of our key items that PLC is looking at right now is just the number of final rules that we're expecting out of this administration in the next really couple weeks here before the end of April. There's something called the Congressional Review Act window. There's a period of time in which regulations from previous administration can be turned over if the next Congress switches parties. And so the Biden administration is really rushing to get a lot of these items out the door before they hit that window. They want to make sure that their version of regulations is able to stand up and not immediately get overturned if November doesn't go Democrats' way. And so there's a couple key rules we're expecting in the next few weeks. Three of those have to do with the Endangered Species Act, the definition of critical habitat, the requirement to do interagency consultation, and the reinstatement of the blanket 4D rule on threatened populations. And some of those other ones have to do with things like the BLM conservation rule. This is something we've been very worried about for almost a year at this point. We're still waiting to see the final text of that rule. But depending on how that goes, you know, that rule could have a really significant impact on the access that grazing permittees have to their allotments moving forward and the way that the BLM manages, or in this case doesn't manage, for multiple use. And so that's something that if we don't see the changes that we need in that final rule, we're going to have to think about what next steps we can take, potentially, you know, in a litigation sense, to get some relief for our federal grazing permittees under that new BLM rule. If and when we see that come out in the next few weeks here.
Well, I know folks can find more information, publiclandscouncil.org. And with that, Director with the Public Lands Council and NCBA Government Affairs, Sigrid Johannes. Sigrid, thanks for joining us on Agriculture of America. Always good to talk with you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, coming up next here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Downtime's a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex premium diesel fuel. Learn more at Cenex.com. We will listen to a conversation I have with Corey Rosenbusch for the Fertilizer Institute back at Commodity Classic in Houston a few weeks ago. That's coming up next on AOA, Agriculture of America.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
Just a little heads up before something bad happens.
Move your coffee cup away from your computer.
Oh, no, 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 no.
So you can have more control.
Stop. You're texting your boss by mistake.
Uh-oh. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Warning, the cap is loose on that ketchup.
Ugh. Don't wait. You have the power to change the outcome. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
When it comes to cereal disease protection, Prosaro Pro 400 SC fungicide from Bayer makes all the difference. With three effective active ingredients for overlapping control of foliar and head diseases, and a flexible application window for head scab, it's formulated to lower DON, protect yield potential, and promote superior grain quality. Prosaro Pro. The future of plant health starts here. Visit ProsaroPro.com to learn more. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
On the March episode of the Monthly Grind with the National Corn Growers Association, we learn about the newly launched Radical Challenge and the need for finding new uses for corn with Dr. Alex Buck, Director of Industrial Innovation at Iowa Corn, and Chad Epler, NCGA's Market Development Action Team Vice Chair.
The Radical Challenge is an open innovation challenge. It sets out to invest a minimum of $1.5 million checkoff dollars into startup and growth companies from around the world so that we can drive new uses for corn and develop long-term sustainable demand for corn production.
Well, what we have here domestically, corn is grown in about 100 million acres. And so 48% of the corn production is used for animal feed, 30% biofuels, 22% exports. But we still have this mass surplus that we need to find a use for. We are looking for people that have these ideas and want to put it to use and use these bushels of corn.
Learn more online at radical.vc and join us the first Wednesday of every month for the Monthly Grind on AOA. Every Tuesday, we'll be sitting around the table, sponsored by CHS. Join us and learn how CHS creates the vital connections that empower agriculture, helping farmers and ranchers like you succeed. We'll hear from different voices from throughout the cooperative system, sharing stories about how good things happen when people work together. Join us around the table every Tuesday or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more. When news happens in agriculture, or when the markets are moving, we've got you covered as your trusted voice in agriculture. The team at the American Ag Network has the knowledge and experience to keep you informed on the issues impacting farmers and ranchers. We've got you covered on air, online, and on demand. Find the American Ag Network on your favorite social media platforms, and also follow the American Ag Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are the American Ag Network.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Get the latest bonus interviews, exclusive content, and more with the American Ag Today podcast. Just search for American Ag Today and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel. Learn more online at cenex.com. Well, as we wrap up today's program, I had a conversation with Corey Rosenbusch with the Fertilizer Institute back at Commodity Classic a few weeks ago in Houston, Texas. Let's listen in to that interview right now on AOA.
I think probably what's most impressive to me is an entire floor really dedicated to new product innovation. So you see new biologicals, biostimulants, new fertilizer technology, carbon mapping systems. It is really incredible what's up there. And that's exciting for us because as the Fertilizer Institute, you know, we've really broadened our tent to include a lot of those innovative products. We see them as a complementary tool to fertilizer use efficiency. And as a matter of fact, we've developed that biostimulant certification. So that'll be a perfect spot for that now that I know all those companies are up there. We've had our first one complete that certification. We'll be announcing it soon.
Well, and that's just, I think, speaks to the explosion in the technology that's available. To your point, all the new companies that are here, the biological space, et cetera, and the complement they have to the fertilizer industry. I mean, just the continued advancements, I think, is so great to see, isn't it, Corey?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see why now. Like, what was the timing of that? And I think a couple of things came together. One, farmers have always been good stewards, right? They've always wanted to be efficient. I think when we saw the market volatility that we did the last 2 years, it really allowed them to experiment with things and try to see, okay, we got some strong commodity prices. We could make some investments in new technologies. And at the same time, we need to be more efficient with our fertilizer in this market environment. So I think that's what kind of led to that perfect storm where we saw these products really pop up on the shelf.
Well, thinking about efficiency, we know commodity prices have pulled back down a little bit here in recent months. We're getting ready for spring planting season. A lot of guys have made decisions or are making decisions. So let's talk just from a supply standpoint. What's the latest you're hearing? How are things looking here as we get into spring?
Yeah, good timing or bad timing. We just had TFI's annual meeting as well. So we had about 500 of our industry leaders coming together. And I think the key themes that came out of that event is everyone's expecting that we'll have a solid spring. As you mentioned, crop prices aren't through the roof, but they're not significantly deflated. But that's also left everyone kind of questioning what is everyone going to do. So there's still a lot of uncertainty out there. At the same time, I heard everyone anecdotally say it's the earliest spring start they've ever had. I mean, we had a few people even cancel because they were in the fields this week 45 days earlier than normal. So things are popping. I think part of the delay in decision making does give us a little bit of concern about, where is that supply going to be positioned? And in some cases, there were discussions this week of product is needed, but we're probably looking at, out to May before anything can be delivered to those particular locations. So we'll see how the spring plays out, but that's not anything new. We have that every year. We always have these pockets of supply disruptions.
I was going to say, that's not a logistical challenge per se, because I feel like logistics have improved. It's just a matter of, hey, we're early and we don't have the product that we need necessarily in some locations.
That, and then the other factor is the retailers especially are not going to take positions on inventory. They are not going to go buy up a bunch of product without a guarantee from a grower that they're going to buy in at a certain price, because then they're going to be left holding the bag. And those prices can shift a lot in the next few weeks. And so it's that just-in-time mentality that leads to that challenge. So getting a vessel here, a barge up the river to a certain warehouse, that's the challenge. It's not that it's not available.
What about, we continue to watch the regulatory environment, of course. We're watching in D.C. We're trying to get a farm bill done. We're trying to get the government funded, things like that. So I know there's a lot of turmoil on Capitol Hill, and we watch different EPA regulations, things like that. Is there anything on your mind here in early 2024 that is a concern of yours that farmers should be paying attention to when it comes to fertilizer?
That's a fantastic question. I don't want to scare anyone, but this was the subject of our board meeting this week at the TFI annual meeting. Congress last year only passed 38 pieces of legislation, the lowest of any Congress. And some people would say that's a good thing. So depending on that perspective, supportive of what's needed. But what we will see then is the Biden administration going into the last few months of needing to get some of their policy objectives across of this term are going to be exploding regulations right now. Two examples we've seen is this PM 2.5, so particulate matter that's allowed to be in the air. It has been set at such a low level that 80% of the counties in the United States would be out of compliance. And that essentially means that companies won't be able to get permits to expand, to put in a new blending facility. Those are some of the challenges of that rule. And then EPA is going through a risk assessment for formaldehyde. And you may think, oh, formaldehyde, I'm not dissecting frogs or storing bodies. But urea formaldehyde is used to granulate every single urea fertilizer in the world. And so if they finish that risk assessment and say, we can't use it anymore, you've just wiped out all of the urea production in the world. That is some scary stuff that this administration is pursuing, and they're in a mad sprint to the finish line to get it done. So that's really where we're focused and concerned in these next few months.
Well, I know we've seen in the recent months a lot of that talk on Moroccan fertilizer and some of the different news coming out of Capitol Hill about that. We're, of course, watching the wars in the Middle East and the Black Sea region, maybe, you know, could that affect supplies potentially, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe on some of those topics, anything you're watching right now?
Yeah, I mean, we were watching very closely with the new Russian sanctions that got released last week, wondering if they were going to go after the Russian fertilizer supply. That did not make any of those sanctions lists that the White House put out that were anew. So that product is still going to be moving. A lot of those supply chains have kind of settled out since the war and some of those trade cases. That trade case went through a review. It's now been referred back to the judge. It did not get overturned. I think, you know, you can expect that will probably likely stay in place. I'm not predicting the future until the five-year end, which will be next year, 2025. Russian products still, you know, getting into China and to Africa. So I'm not seeing any major disruptions there. So as long as there's no little bump in the road that throws some of that off, I don't see anything major disruptions there.
And once again, Corey Rosenbusch there with the Fertilizer Institute, talking with him a few weeks ago during Commodity Classic in Houston, Texas. Well, we're out of time here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Not all grease created equal. Cenex Premium Grease is made with high-quality ingredients to provide durable protection. Learn more at Cenex.com. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Young farmers don't listen to the radio, right? Wrong. In a recent survey, 74% of young producers said they get their most important agricultural information from their trusted farm radio station. Surprised? Don't be. If you think about it, it makes perfect sense. Radio is the perfect companion because it goes with you everywhere. Whether you're in the shop, on the combine, or in the truck, farm radio is right there with you. This message brought to you by the National Association of Farm Broadcasting.